Well, we sat down to look at all of the dust after it had settled and decide who won the offseason, who lost the offseason. Plus, UMass heads to the MAC, and we wonder what's next for regionality in college sports. All of that and more right here on the Three Technique.
One man. Goodbye. Hello, Heisman. 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
They get it back now to the 30. They're down to the 20. Paul LeBand is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
Four-man Alabama rush. Got him. No, they didn't. Oh, my gracious.
Yep.
How about that?
How about that? Indeed. Welcome in, everybody. Another episode of the Three Technique along with Trey Reeves, Garrett Turney. I'm Mitch Mason. Glad to have you along with us for another installment of our off-season content series. And guys, as I sit here wearing a Division II school's colors, I look across the college landscape and decide there's some real winners. There are some real losers before spring ball that we get to pick apart here tonight. And Trey, I mean, in a lot of cases, the rich get richer, but part of this ongoing series, I think, as we have several installments, will be it's not just the rankings that 247 has put together that determines winners and losers, but it's fit, right? It's going to be for your specific conference in an expanded playoff, who really put themselves in a position to make the college football playoff in 2024?
Oh, absolutely. And we've seen time and time again that 247 rankings do not always correlate to success on the field, right? We just look at the school 20 miles north of me for that fact to be proven true. So we're in a new paradigm, man. And we kind of went through that last week when we talked about the 12-team playoff and what college football could look like if we had started this earlier. This is a whole new ball game. Teams are going to be recruiting for their needs, for their to win in their conference, and winning their conference is going to mean a ticket to the dance automatically. So I'm really excited to see how that shapes out and how teams shift their recruiting strategies. And we've definitely seen that this offseason so far, that teams are preparing. They're still trying to accumulate as much talent as they possibly can to win in their circumstances, but it's spreading the talent out more than we have seen in the past decade or so.
Yeah, you mentioned that episode that we did last week, diving back all the way to 1998. What would a 12-team playoff looked like if it had started at the beginning of the BCS era? That was a incredibly popular episode. If you're new to the channel, definitely go and find that, whether it's on the YouTube side or listen to the podcast. Put it on a little time and a half podcast listen. You'll get through it in your workday. But over on Twitter at 3TechPod, you can find us over there. It got rave reviews, some fascinating comments. It was awesome seeing all the different fan bases dive into it. Garrett, imagining a world where Kansas State is a blue blood program. Turns out that's a pretty popular thought experiment.
That is the world that I want to live in, guys. Kansas State being a blue blood. That's amazing. I love that. And so, yeah, I was bummed I wasn't able to be on that one with y'all last week, but it was a fun one to listen to. And yeah, I definitely encourage anybody who missed it to go back and follow up with it.
Yeah, definitely make sure you're subscribed to the channel at 3TechPod, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter. We're growing on all of them. We'd love to have you be a part of the Jimmies and the Joes. Get our daily content over on YouTube. We've got mock drafts coming out. In fact, after this episode, we're actually recording another mock draft. So head on over to our YouTube channel or just click the next video and see what we came up with there. But guys, before we get to that, I mentioned I'm wearing a Division II school colors. If you would like to wear Division II, offbeat Division I school colors, you can head on over to our friends at homefieldapparel.com, the good brand rolling out March Madness content right now and collections for the basketball season. You can get 15% off your entire order by using code 3TechPod. Or if you are a second, third, fourth time purchaser, heck, raise your hand. No shame there. Join the club. You can use a link that is in our bio again on Instagram or on Twitter. That gets you the same savings, help support the show, and you're going to rep some amazing gear. Homefieldapparel.com, code 3TechPod for 15% off. Gentlemen, before we get into our winners and losers for this episode, we had to set the record straight. And as we talked about this, there were some obvious teams that we just decided, you know what, for sake of the content, let's just wave them through into the Hall of Fame of winners and losers for this 2024 offseason. We've got Ohio State and Texas that are just it's like the fast lane at the airport, right? The pre-check. You're just welcome in. Welcome aboard, Mr. Buckeyes. Welcome aboard, Mr. Longhorns. You don't get the full pat down. You're just elevated to first class. For losers, we'd had Alabama and Washington. I think Washington maybe a lot more so than Alabama, but those storylines have been so talked about, so rehashed, and we covered them when they happened on this show that we just decided, you know what? Those are the obvious ones. Let's move past those, but you know, very quickly, a thought on any one of these four teams. Like, is there one that stands out to you more so than the other? And Trey, we'll start with you.
I am intrigued to see how Washington can respond. I do think that obviously the coaching staff pieces, the players that they lost, it's going to be difficult. They're going into a new context in the Big Ten, but they still have pieces there. And I still think that I think they made a good coaching hire. I think that they have a lot that could go right for them this year. They could still make a splash in year one in the Big Ten. I don't know how big of a splash. That splash might be 8-4 in a really good bowl game. And that's okay in the first year of a new head coach, right? And you're building for something new. So I'm not completely out on Washington for next year, but to include them in a loser standpoint, they definitely are going to take a step back from where they were this year.
I'll include them in the loser category and think that they don't do much. Mitch, to go with your, you know, kind of TSA pre-check comparison there, they didn't just get the normal pat down. They got taken to the back room and, you know, full body searched with, you know, all the different gloves and whatever else because something came up fishy on the thing. Washington took it bad. I mean,
Mr. Washington, we're going to need you to sit in this room for the next 4 to 5 hours.
Washington made an unfortunate bomb joke in the airport. And now they're going to go get taken into a back room and miss their flight. So yeah. That's that. I mean, on the positive side, though, like to talk about Ohio State, man, winners of the offseason, I don't even think begins to grab it. This really feels like, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago and we did the offensive coordinator breakdown. Ohio State, man, if y'all don't do it this year, I don't think it's ever going to happen. Like, it's true. If you can't figure out a way with a good quarterback and good running back and a couple of good running backs and all the talent you could possibly want,
great plus defense, the coaching
and the schedule, like, if you can't do it this year, Ohio State, come on.
I totally agree. Totally agree. I mean, we've said that here on this show. I went out on a limb earlier, about a month ago, said, hey, Ohio State should be the favorite to win the national championship this next season. Until proven wrong, I'm probably going to stand on that hill. It's like college baseball, right? You had, was it Mississippi State and then Mississippi win it the next year? You could potentially have Michigan and then Ohio State win it the next year. I mean,
that'd be a fun universe to live in.
It'd certainly keep the rivalries spicy. Now, I think for Michigan and Ohio State, they would hope that unlike the baseball examples, they don't crater for the next 3 to 5 years like the Mississippi schools have done, but that's a topic maybe for another podcast. Guys, let's get into it, though. Our actual winners here, and Garrett, we're going to start up in the Pacific Northwest. Washington obviously made a tremendous run to the College Football National Championship. They had to go through our first offseason winner to do so.
Yeah, I mean, look, Oregon is in as good of a position as you could possibly be in right now. I think, I mean, it's in terms of not being Ohio State, right? Not having everything just completely land in your lap. But outside of Ohio State, if you're going to pick someone else, you think, hey, this team might end up in a really good spot. This has got to be Oregon, right? You look at Oregon going into the offseason and you would expect a step back, right? They're going to a tougher conference. They're going to be playing in the Big Ten. That's going to be tougher than playing in the Pac-12. There's more good teams in that conference. It's going to be hard to find your way to the top. You're losing Bo Nix. He's going to go be one of the top, you know, probably what, 5 or 6 quarterbacks taken at worst. And he's going to go and have a lot of success. He was great for you at Oregon. You're losing Bucky Irving. You're losing lots of talent up and down that roster. And so you're probably thinking, okay, well, you know, time to step back. And, you know, there is some rumors at least going into the offseason that you might lose your coach and he might be going off to a couple different locations. And then you look up kind of here in, you know, early March and you say, wait a minute, how did they get better? There's no way that they actually got better. You pick up Dylan Gabriel, you pick up Dante Moore, two big time quarterbacks, obviously, that can come in and compete and push each other to, you know, succeed in the immediate short term. Obviously, Dante Moore, lots of talent, hadn't really showed it at UCLA, but that might be more of a function at UCLA than it is Dante Moore. You know, they bring in the third ranked recruiting class, according to 24/7. You lose Troy Franklin, but you bring in Evan Stewart. That might be better. I'm not going to go completely in on that. I'm just saying Evan Stewart has all the talent in the world. It didn't pan out at Texas A&M because he was in a pretty atrocious offensive system. But at the end of the day, you know, it's an even move in my mind to bring in really, really top end talent. And then of course, a couple other guys highlighted here, Jabbar Muhammad, Brandon Johnson, Kobe Savage, all coming in to boost this team. This should be a really good team. And in terms of just offseason, not thinking too much about next year, projecting into next season, not looking ahead at the schedule or anything, this is as good of an offseason as I can think most teams could expect. You keep your staff mostly intact. You're making a shift upwards in conference. Though it's going to be difficult, you look around at some of those other powers in that conference, and a lot of them did take a step back. And so I think looking at kind of how the offseason panned out and sort of all the different pieces got put together, Oregon ends up on the top. I think you can expect to see them in the Big Ten championship game.
That's what I'm expecting right now. And if you look at the S&P Plus, just to project forward just a little bit, they're ranked third in the S&P Plus, which is a lot of based on returning production. When I saw that, I was thinking to myself, aren't they losing all their returning production? Aren't they losing their whole passing game, receiving game, running game? And then, oh yeah, they plugged all those holes with proven Power Five guys, which is just more than you could ask for. So the Ducks stock way, way up. And yeah, I'm projecting them as of right now in early March to be in that Big Ten championship game.
Grass is plenty green in Eugene, guys. I mean, Dan Lanning said it best himself in that little hype video. I look at the defense. What was the one thing that held them back last year, especially when they played Washington? Is the inability to stop the pass. And this year they go out and they address that through the transfer portal. They get one of the best cover corners in the country in Jabbar Muhammad, who actually spurns Texas. Cousins with Manny Muhammad down on the 40 acres, a local product in the Lone Star State. He decides to stay up in the Pacific Northwest. Brandon Johnson, an underrated safety. And then Kobe Savage, who also had offers from all over when he left Kansas State, decides to go up to Oregon. So that defense certainly seems like they take a step forward, and I agree. I think in totality, you look at where this team is compared to a lot of other teams on their schedule, what they did in the high school ranks as well, it's really hard not to be bullish on Oregon and Ducks heading into their first year in the Big Ten.
Yeah, spot on. I don't think there's anything else to add on the Ducks, man. They are going to be gunning for the conference championship in year one. I think that's more than you could ask for.
I will say, looking at the schedule just for a second, I pulled it up. They have three tough games, in my opinion. They have Ohio State, Michigan, and Washington. They only go to Michigan. They get the other two at home. So those are kind of your big games that you have to look at if you're looking at Oregon. I mean, I like those odds if I'm Oregon.
We talked about Michigan's schedule. That's brutal. Following a national championship, losing your quarterback, losing your head coach.
They're going to be hanging on to that banner, man. Come on. It's a championship.
Banners fly forever. Trey, take us down south to Tallahassee. My Knowles coin, I made it public. I disclosed the books. I opened up the records. I sold on my Knowles coin preceding the playoff announcement. I really feel like I got a good value, really 10x'd that investment. But it seems like Florida State is maybe building up to make another run. They've got a lot of pieces to replace, but they also went into the portal and did a heck of a job.
Yeah, and that's Mike Norvell's MO at this point, isn't it? Just rebuilding, reloading, and plugging holes at positions of need. We've seen him do it time and time again. The whole impact player portal for them last year was all guys that got through the portal. So fourth-ranked transfer class on 247. They've got a lot of holes to fill. Obviously, Jordan Travis, obviously Trey Benson, those wide receivers, Johnny Wilson, Keon Coleman, Jared Verse, tons of guys that they need to fill. But, you know, they're getting Sean Murphy to boost the linebacker core. Roydell Williams is going to be, I think the Trey Benson replacement, I think that's a fantastic pickup at the running back position from Alabama. They basically are turning into Tuscaloosa East with all the guys that are coming over from Bama, seven total. And Marvin Jones Jr., edge from Georgia, coming down as well. And to fill that quarterback position, this is the one I'm most intrigued about, guys, because I think it was a mixed bag for DJU at Oregon State. He had a lot of good, right? It looked like when he got the spotlight taken off of him a bit, he was so overanalyzed at a place like Clemson, at a high profile place like that. He goes out west to Corvallis, kind of gets out of the spotlight a little bit, had a lot of good last year, but then we started to see some of those bugaboos come back in the bigger games. I'm thinking of the Oregon game. I'm thinking of the Washington game, specifically with that. Can he take what he learned out in Corvallis and apply that at Florida State, going back up against the ACC schedule that he used to face at Clemson? That's going to be the key to me, because Jordan Travis, he was a plug-and-play star at Florida State. We saw him get developed. We saw him figure out and become a Heisman contender by the time that he was a senior. This is DJU's last ride. He's played a lot of college football at this point in his career. He's not going to be – I don't know that he can be exponentially better than what we've seen so far. But if he can be more like – what we saw at Corvallis and less like what we saw in Clemson, I think Florida State can manage with that.
Yeah. The nice part about it is Uiagalelei may not have to be the Jordan Travis replacement, right? Just step into his shoes, even to win the ACC. I mean, we're going to talk about Clemson here in a minute. Spoiler alert, they're on the other side of the coin. And it just feels like two different programs going in two different directions. One of them stock arrow up, one of them stock arrow down. This is as talented a team as you're going to find in most parts of the country. And as long as that pro style offense for the Noles can keep DJU clean and can give the defense multiple different looks where they're not just keying in on the run like Oregon State was kind of forcing their hand. And once you stop that run, it was either, you know, air it out or bust for the Beavers. As long as they can stay balanced, boy, that defense, they've got so many talented guys. You mentioned, Trey, that their transfers coming over from Alabama. Marvin Jones comes over from Georgia. Very, very high ceiling. Don't really know where his floor is. Hadn't gotten a ton of playing time between the hedges, and that's why he went east to Tallahassee. But on paper, man, this team, they look really, really solid.
Yeah, I love what Florida State's done overall on the roster. But man, I look at DJU and I'm, to quote Mean Girls a little bit, stop trying to make DJU happen. Like I know that he looked maybe better, I guess, in Corvallis, but I just pulled up his game logs. His highest passing total last year was 284 against San Diego State. He's just not that kind of quarterback. And I know that it's not the best system in Corvallis. Right? I know that they're not,
they didn't ask him.
They're not an air it out type of thing, but no. If you're going to take a quarterback with lots of talent who made some pretty big mistakes with Clemson and had some great moments, but also some really, really poo-poo moments for him, there's some really bad moments for DJU at Clemson. And then to go up to Oregon State and be, I mean, basically a bus driver and you know, just kind of manage the game for him, I don't know that I'm super, super excited about that coming in. Now, to what you just said, Mitch, I mean, he probably doesn't have to be all that great. He doesn't really have to be an amazing quarterback who, you know, goes up and is an all-world beater. What we saw even this year, they didn't need a good quarterback to win the ACC championship game. And so, you know, I think that this is still a really good team, a really good program. And I think that DJU can get it done for them. I worry, you know, again, going into next year, really what that ceiling is. And I kind of wish that Florida State had gone for a little bit more of a dynamic quarterback than just DJU.
Tell you what, that schedule, very, very friendly. Versus Georgia Tech, versus Boston College, versus Memphis, versus Cal at SMU. We'll have season tickets to that. Versus Clemson, at Duke, at Miami, versus North Carolina, at Notre Dame, Charleston Southern bye week, and then versus the Florida Gators. Even if you think even if you find them tripping up a couple times, 10-2, I think, as long as that loss is to Clemson, let's be honest, Miami's probably not vying for an ACC title. So Florida State's got a way to win, get that auto bid. I think it's a playoff type season for the Noles in 2024, which is,
I will say they do need to find who their alpha receivers are going to be, because that's something that obviously helped Jordan Travis and helped the backups when they had to play. They did get a couple nice pickups in the portal, a couple SEC guys, and Jaylen Brown from LSU and Malik Benson from Alabama, but somebody's got to step up. And I don't think it's going to be somebody that was on the roster last year. So that's going to be definitely something to watch in spring ball and fall camp.
Yeah, find your Johnny Wilson, find your Keon Coleman, your Jaheim Bell at tight end. He's gone to the NFL as well.
Those guys just grow on trees. Just go find a couple of those guys.
Well, you can find them in the portal.
You could, portal. Spring portal opens up, so.
New season, new chapter for sure. Final team in our winners part one. You knew this was coming, much to our chagrin. Transfer portal king stays on top. He's got the number one class. I'm talking about Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. Guys, and it's pretty simple here. You look at what he was able to recruit from specifically other SEC teams. And you've got top edge rusher out of Florida, Princely, and I'm not going to even try and say his name because I'd butcher that. Really, really good edge guy out of Florida, as long as he stays in good graces off the field. Separate issue for Ole Miss. Logan Diggs comes over from LSU. Walter Nolan from Texas A&M. Chris Poo-Paul, linebacker from Arkansas. Juice Wells, elite wide receiver from South Carolina. And Yam Banks, one of the best defensive backs in the country. You may not have heard of him because he played at South Alabama, but an elite talent coming up from the Jaguars. Point is, Ole Miss has just everything going right for them on the field. And we saw them last playing in what was the Sugar Bowl, right? Against Penn State, absolutely demolishing formerly one of my playoff seeds in the Nittany Lions. This is a team that's got a lot of momentum behind it. They haven't been able to match up physically with the elite teams, but if you keep recruiting like this in the transfer portal and keep taking the top wide receiver available, the top defensive end available, the top linebacker available, eventually I think some of that narrative starts to shift.
Yeah, I think you're right. And you know, it pains me to say positive things about Lane Kiffin, but he's done an excellent job getting talent to Oxford, and now with an expanded playoff, it's going to be easier for him to get to compete for a national title. Truly, I think there's obvious roadblocks with the four-team system, but it's going to be, as always, like we always say with Lane Kiffin, when you rely so much on the portal, it can vary so much from year to year. You have to hit constantly. And I know the star rankings say that he has hit on a lot of guys, but you got to see it on the field and see it mesh together in the fall. It'll be fascinating to see how fast that does. Obviously, having a lot of guys coming back. Jackson Dart, I don't know how Jackson Dart still has eligibility, but Jackson Dart still has eligibility for next season. Having your quarterback come back goes a long way towards creating that cohesiveness. So if they can get it, if they can hit the ground running, if they can get it fast, I haven't looked at their schedule to see. I know the last couple of years, they've had really nice ramp up periods, right? Like we've looked up and hey, Ole Miss is 7-0, 8-0. Maybe they haven't played the toughest part of their schedule yet. So I haven't looked that up yet to see if they have a similar situation this year, but that's certainly helpful when you have a high transfer takeover like this. So kudos to Lane Kiffin for getting the talent on the field. He's done a great job of creating that cohesiveness year in and year out. Can he do it again? If he can, he's definitely has an inside track to a playoff seed.
Well, I'll tell you this, they're going to be 5-0 going into a game at South Carolina.
They're going to be 6-0 going into LSU.
they've got the Paladins to open it up from Furman, the stock still list Middle Tennessee State Blue Raiders. They go to go to Wake Forest, Georgia Southern at home, Kentucky at home. I'll never take Kentucky seriously again. They're at South Carolina. Tricky place to play, and then they go to LSU. You think they're probably headed into that bye week at 6-1. That would be my guess.
I mean, just looking at what they've been able to bring in on top of what they're bringing back, this is probably one of the most talented rosters in the country. And I think that there's not a whole lot of debate on that. And also, this is at a perfect time for them when a lot of teams are cratering around them. A lot of teams in their conference that maybe formerly would have been in a great position, kind of starting to fall off a little bit and lose some stuff. Man, I'm looking at their schedule. I think maybe Georgia is their loss. And even then, with this amount of talent you're bringing in, like, you know, it's Georgia, it's at home, fans should be rocking. It could swing their way. And so, you know, I think right now as I'm sitting here, I'm looking at Ole Miss and their favorable schedule. I'm thinking, hey, man, first off, what happened? How'd they get this good of a draw? But also second, like, they might actually be the favorite this year in the SEC. I think obviously there's teams that have been there and have proven some things. And obviously, you know, Georgia is currently the king. But, you know, Georgia could be vulnerable. And with as much as Ole Miss is bringing in and as hot as they finish the season, I think that game in early November is going to be a hot one for them. So they've certainly won the offseason. We've seen Lane do that several times now. But this time winning it, not just with flashy players and flashy names, but actually, you know, putting some actual studs in the trenches and seeing, you know, if they can kind of build some stuff out there. So I guess I'm excited to see what they're going to do. Don't love Lane Kiffin, but I can certainly respect what he's doing over there at Ole Miss.
You've got two tricky road games. That's it. At LSU. Yep.
It's hard to pick them to lose more than two games with that schedule.
It really is. You get Oklahoma at home.
I'm high on the Sooners.
Yeah, you go to Florida at the end of the season. Maybe it's only really one tricky road game. At South Carolina, at LSU. Those are the two tricky road games. Because, listen, Florida late in the season with that schedule, it might be opt-out central by that point.
South Carolina is a great environment. I don't know that I'd call that a tricky road game.
The cockpit's tough to play in.
No, it's a great environment. I'm not telling you that. I'm just saying I don't think South Carolina is going to be worth all that much this year. So I'll take a very, very talented 5-0 Ole Miss team to walk in there and handle business.
Yeah, I think they'll probably be on maybe alert that weekend. But yeah, very, very favorable schedule for the Rebs for sure. As I mentioned, part one of many future segments to come as we continue throughout this offseason. Again, this is pre-spring ball, so we've got the post spring practices to go through as well, and we'll continue to update this, bring you some other teams. I've got teams already on a short list that we'll hit for part two down the line. Guys, let's round table the losers here, and I think you have to start with Clemson. Clemson has yet to take a transfer. They just continue to ignore the modern way of life. Dabo Swinney has clearly said it's his way or the highway, and that includes taking less transfers than schools like Howard. I don't understand why this is the tact that, despite Clemson's struggles and everyone else around him saying, you know what, instead of waiting and hoping that five-star freshman absolutely pans out, let's go get somebody from the portal as an insurance policy or as a plug-and-play starter. You don't have to look that far down the road to Tallahassee to see how that's worked for Florida State. And yet Clemson just decides, no, we're just going to do it the old fashioned way. I'm sure it frustrates a lot of Tigers fans.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I think Dabo Swinney's kind of coping right now. When I'm looking at kind of his track record, obviously he's won a couple championships, but like he's gotten there on the back of some quarterbacks who are extremely talented. And with some extremely talented players around him, obviously you have to coach those players and develop them. I'm not taking that away from him, but it kind of feels like maybe the talent hasn't been there the last couple of years at Clemson. And with the changes going on, he hasn't really been able to figure out how to keep up. And so instead of just admitting like, hey, I'm kind of behind, it almost looks like to me that he's like, nope, I'm not going to do it. I don't like what college football has become. I don't like the portal. I don't like NIL. All of this is bad. And he's gone extremely public and kind of fussed about it a little bit. And, you know, to me, that looks like a little bit of loser's limp and a little bit of just like coping. Because I mean, look, he's on the hot seat. I think you'd have to acknowledge that at this point. He's definitely on the hot seat. And if he doesn't start to adjust to the modern idea of what college football is, he'll be out of there pretty quick. And I can't blame, you know, Clemson for moving on from him if they do that. You know, he's the guy who's supposed to be moving your program in the right direction and adapting to challenges. And, you know, whether he's right or not, right, he can full-heartedly believe that everything that's happened is bad for college football. That's fine. I disagree with him, but I'm not going to necessarily argue every point with him. But, like, regardless, you're still the head football coach at a major program. You have to adjust, and he just hasn't. And I think that's ultimately why Clemson is in this position. There's a bigger problem at Clemson than just they didn't take a transfer this cycle. There's much bigger problems with just the mindset in the program, which is why you're seeing stuff like this.
Clemson's not going to fire Dabo.
I don't think he's on the hot seat necessarily.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's on the hot seat.
How many more years do they have to like miss the playoff before he is?
If they're missing a 12-team playoff consistently, then you start to have that conversation. But
if he misses this year, is he on the hot seat?
No. He'd have to miss at least 2 years in a row, I think, to even start having those conversations. In my opinion, I'm not a Clemson fan. If you're a Clemson fan and I'm just completely misreading the fan base, then hit us up. But I think he's built up enough goodwill from the past. But I totally agree with the sentiment of your point that he's not evolving and it could cause him to be on the hot seat eventually. Sure. I totally agree with that sentiment of your point, because when you look at Nick Saban, who I think Dabo is probably frustrated that he's not succeeding right now. When you look at Nick Saban, he would come out and be vocal about how he hated changes in college football, spread offenses, up-tempo, transfer portal, NIL, and maybe NIL is finally the straw that broke the camel's back with Nick Saban, but he was always willing to adapt to those things. And he would complain about them. He wouldn't be happy about it, but he would go out and figure out how to be the best at it. Dabo doesn't really seem interested in doing that at all with the transfer portal and NIL. And it's going to hold Clemson back in the long term if he doesn't adjust. He still has time to adjust, because if he decides he wants to take it seriously, Clemson will automatically become one of these top destinations for transfers in the country. But he has to decide, he has to buy in, and he has to figure out that that's something he wants to do. I thought it was a positive step in the right direction last offseason when he stepped out of his coaching tree to hire coordinators for the first time.
Sure.
But obviously that didn't pay off down the road. It wasn't as good. Maybe he has a quarterback problem. Maybe he has a talent on campus problem. Again, that's something you could fix with the portal pretty easily. But he's got to figure out how to buy into all that if he wants to take Clemson and keep them at the top level.
I just think they're really missing Brent Venables coaching that defense. That defense seems to have maybe lost a step in its identity. And yeah, the offense has just gone ice cold since Trevor Lawrence left campus, right? I mean, Cade Klubnik's a good quarterback, clearly doesn't appear to be the elite level quarterback, but I don't know. Maybe he takes a Joe Burrow step this next season. We'll wait and see. Purdue may not be at the top of your list for losers in this 2024 offseason, but oh my gosh, it was an exodus from campus this season. 25 transfers. They only replaced them with 16. They lost the conference sack leader, Nick Scorton, to Texas A&M. He's coming home to play for the Aggies. That's a tough look for the Boilermakers. And listen, in a conference that's already hard enough to play in when you share it with the likes of Michigan and Ohio State, now you've got to welcome Oregon, USC, Washington, UCLA to town, and you don't have that identity in West Lafayette that led to them being the Spoilermakers, right? I mean, they were dangerous each week that they showed up on your calendar. Right now, I don't know that you feel like that, and the transfers out certainly are not helping this program.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head, Mitch. When you're a Purdue of the world, it's going to be very, very difficult in this modern era of college football to keep your team together, because look at Nick Scorton. Obviously leads the Big Ten in sacks, and the first year that he can, he's off. There might be some other things at play here. Obviously he moved back to a school that's 5 minutes from his home high school. So maybe he wants to go back home. I don't know the full story there, but that's going to be the story for a lot of these programs at the level of Purdue, these mid to lower tier power conference programs. They're going to lose their star players more often than not. And that's the sad reality of college football. They've got to figure out a way. And once someone does it, I think there'll be a model, but no one's really figured out a way to keep that talent at these schools just yet. And until someone does, and there's a model to follow, or there's just a big amount of investment in the program, it's going to be really hard to keep these talented players on the campus in places like West Lafayette.
Yeah, and I mean, clearly, Trey, the model is not there for Purdue. Don't follow the Purdue model, because that's the model that got
they kept Zach Edey. I don't know how they did that, but
yeah, that's not awful, I guess. I don't know. I just look at him and I say, this is just another casualty of the expanding conferences and all of that. That's really the only thing I don't like about this whole new era. We were just talking about new modern football, and like, I don't care about the NIL or stuff like that. Like, that's all great stuff and great additions, but man, these mega conferences, really, there is a bigger conversation around that and what it's going to do to some of these sort of middle to low tier teams. And yeah, Purdue right now just getting kind of ground up in the Big Ten.
I think so. I'm worried about them. Now, we're going to talk about UMass in just a second. We've got one more loser here. We'll transition to them in a second. But I'm concerned for the teams like Purdue, right, that are at the bottom of these mega conferences that really just not – it's not that they turn into bye weeks necessarily, but you've seen what's happened at Indiana. It's hard to keep talent on campus, right? Like, if you are going to play at Indiana or Purdue right now, you kind of know we're not competing for anything – of note in the conference. We're looking to get developed. We're looking to, you know, achieve an awesome bowl game, maybe pull off an upset or two during my career, or you're going there to catch somebody else's eye and ultimately transfer out. That's what I'm concerned about in this new conference, super conference system that we're moving to. But I did mention UCLA coming over into the Big Ten. They're not exactly winning the offseason either, Trey. I mean, you look at what they lost this season, and really, really tough to think about playing football over in Uncle Juice territory.
Yeah, you lose your future QB and Dante Moore to Oregon.
You would have been your starter this year.
You poured a lot into him this year. You sacrificed wins this year, in my opinion, to get him reps so that he could be your quarterback of the future. And then he jets off to Oregon, not to mention a ton of your defensive production. They had a really, really solid defense out there this year. It kept them in bowl contention. It kept them in games when their offense was sputtering, really backwards for what we've seen from UCLA in the past. But then you lose your head coach. And Garrett and I spent a lot of time talking about Chip Kelly leaving UCLA to go to Ohio State. That's just a bad look, man. Like vibes aside and, you know, context aside, because I know that Chip Kelly was on the hot seat. I know that he was not long for Westwood. But it's just a bad look to see your sitting head coach go leave and be an offensive coordinator, take a demotion on paper to a fellow conference mate, a new conference rival, as you're coming into that conference. That's just a really tough look, and it's hard to bounce back from. It's going to be hard for them to recruit against, because that's a really easy bullet that anybody on the West Coast can say, look, you want to go to UCLA instead of USC, Oregon, Washington? You want to go to the place that lost their head coach to be an offensive coordinator in this conference? Like, just such an easy, easy recruiting pitch against UCLA.
No, and not just a recruiting pitch for those West Coast kids, but this is Big Ten country now, baby. Come on, this is a big pitch for those kids in Ohio that want to go play in Los Angeles. That's also now the footprint of their conference, which is stupid, but whatever. But again, this is another one of those teams where, Trey, you're right. Like, there's so much going wrong. It's a terrible look. And going back to what we just said about Purdue, this is about to be a team that gets grinded up. Like, this is about to be the team that if you can't figure out how to win, you're going to get grinded up underneath Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State and Washington and Oregon and anybody else who might be moving in the right direction, right? There's teams that will go in the right direction. And if you're kind of in that middle group, you're about to get ground up as a bunch of bye weeks and a bunch of easy games and tune-ups and everything else. And, like, UCLA's in that spot right now. And it sucks because they really should be a better program. They have the ability to be, but they just aren't. And, you know, the kind of what we broke down, if you want to go look at that previous video, feel free. But kind of what we broke down is they got to get real creative about how to get people to support this program and really start to pony up, because if they don't, this team's going to go by the wayside quick.
There's a real chance. There's a real chance that UCLA might have missed their window of opportunity to build up some real momentum. And heck, I mean, not having a franchise level quarterback, for lack of a better term, heading into this new situation, whew, might be a tough year one for the Bruins in this system. Those are our losers for part one. Let us know what you think. Who's won the offseason? Who's lost the offseason? Who would you like to see us talk about in part two? Let us know in the comments on YouTube, on Instagram, and over on Twitter. Trey, as we move over to UMass to the MAC, and we talk a little regionality, some beautiful weather in that part of the country right now, you've got another brand that you'd like to tell us about. You've been playing with out in beautiful weather in South Texas.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful weather means we're getting outside. We're playing pickleball, and I'm using my Baller Pro paddle. Guys, this is one of the best paddles you can find on the market when it comes to just quality, price, you name it. It has it, and you can get it for 10% off using our code 3TechPod at ballerpickleball.com. That's B-A-L-L-R pickleball.com. Use our code 3TechPod for 10% off paddles, bags, hats, everything over at their website. You won't regret it. It's going to take your game to the next level.
I mean, who doesn't want to take their pickleball game to the next level? We've got people in the office that are challenging me and my fiance to some games.
You gotta get you a paddle, man. You gotta make sure that you take care of business.
I'm taking the bait, that's for sure. UMass just announced that they're heading to the MAC, and while regionality might be a loose term nowadays, again, point you to USC and UCLA joining the Big Ten Midwest. This seems like it's a win for the MAC, given there are clearly going to be two realities in college football, right? The super conferences and everybody else. And I don't think that anyone is under the assumption that the MAC is maybe ever going to compete for a true national championship. But as we look at the landscape of college football and where these regional products can still thrive, to me, it seems like a great move for the MAC. They get a football team that certainly has had an increased amount of resources put into it. They're recruiting well. Certainly compared to what they've done in the past, they've got other sports that they can compete in, like basketball. That raises the level of competition for the MAC. I'm really in favor of this move for the conference, and I think it sets a precedent, especially as we look towards like Conference USA, that, hey, some of these Division II schools or independent schools, now's the time to gobble them up and really kind of plant the flag for what the future of your conference is going to look like.
Yeah, a couple things. So this, we are seeing the slow death of the independent college football team, because this now leaves two, just UConn and Notre Dame, with Army joining the American and UMass to the MAC. I think this is a win-win for the MAC and UMass. UMass obviously had a hell of a time filling out a schedule over the last few years as an independent, and they are playing just multiple games that they have no business playing in, other than picking up a check. So for the program standpoint, from a winning football game standpoint and a potential to actually compete for a bowl game and compete for, you know, something more than just winning more than two games every year, this is really, really good for UMass to have programs closer to their caliber filling out their schedule rather than having to play like three or four SEC teams every single year. So good for UMass, good for the Minutemen, one of the best mascots in college football, by the way. And yeah, I think you're right. I think this is a nod to regionality. We're going to see that more and more with these G5 conferences, not just from a budget standpoint, but from a true rivalry standpoint. This is going to be where rivalries are preserved. I've seen a lot of celebration that it feels like UMass is coming home to the MAC, where it's where they belong. And yeah, I mean, we're going to see a lot of this in these G5 conferences where true rivalries are celebrated. New ones are going to develop, obviously, as teams play each other more and more, but those true regionality rivalries are still going to mean a lot in these conferences.
Yeah, to me, it feels a little bit weird. It doesn't really feel like regionality, but I guess when you have, you know, like we were just talking about Los Angeles being Big Ten country, it's not that weird. It's still close enough, and it feels all right. For me, look, the MAC is one of my favorite little conferences, right, in terms of you can't really call it G5 anymore because, you know, too many conferences are falling by the wayside. But whatever you would have called the G5 before this offseason, they're one of my favorite conferences in that group. And I think that their big move forward is just finding a way to stay fun and relevant, because I think outside of competing, which they're going to compete for you know, certain bowl games. Their top teams will get in with some of the sort of middle teams, and they'll be able to compete for some, you know, bowl games. But outside of that, the way that this conference stays relevant, and I think the way that a lot of these smaller conferences have to stay relevant, is being something we have to watch, being something where it's fun to watch these games, you know, actually turning it on just for the sake of watching the game, not for the sake of what is it going to do for standings, or is that going to knock them out of the top 12 or whatever it is. You just have to care about watching the game for the sake of the game. And the more they can do that, the better it is. How do they do that? Well, obviously, I think being on the odd times, right, having random, like it's a Tuesday afternoon and there's Maction, right? And so you just have a game on at a random time. That's always great. But I do think part of it is, yeah, keeping it regional, keeping it to where the fans care about the game that's happening, right? If your fans have a sort of, you know, built-in rivalry or a desire to show up to that game, the environment's going to be better. People are going to show up. It's going to be fun to watch. And that energy can kind of come off your screen a little bit. And so I think that that's kind of the path forward for the MAC and for a lot of these other, you know, kind of smaller conferences that have to find a way to compete. There's not going to be a path for most of these conferences to compete for championships right now. They have to be something that TV wants to pay for, right? You have to be, you know, attractive to ESPN or attractive to Fox. And if you can do that, then you're going to find yourself on the other side of it, right? Maybe it is adding, you know, one of these other, you know, teams that you could maybe grab another, what is it, UConn, or, you know, snag them, or find another team maybe in Conference USA or something that you could snag, or just finding some way to keep adding teams, adding smaller teams, going down to, you know, D2, snagging teams, just finding a way to add teams that are going to make your conference more fun and more watchable. The more you can do that, the more I think these teams and these conferences can succeed, which ultimately long-term will help those programs stay relevant. And, you know, who knows, maybe a random small team gets a playoff bid, makes a Cinderella run, and you could see a championship come out of one of these.
I saw UConn get left at the altar by the Big 12 conference. I had it on good authority that the Big 12 had extended a verbal offer that UConn was really just dotting the T's and or dotting the I's and crossing the T's. And instead, the Big 12 goes and poaches half the Pac-12 conference, and UConn kind of informed, hey, your services are no longer needed. I wonder if they're a good fit in the MAC, or, you know, maybe they go to the American. We'll see. Again, these smaller conferences having to kind of bid to figure out who's going to be the next real edge, the next real X factor as far as that conference's ability to compete. Football, basketball doesn't you know, really, I think, fall to one specific sport, because they've got to think of things so much more holistically than the SEC or the Big Ten, who obviously have great competition in all of those sports. But let's be honest, football, basketball, those are the moneymakers. You know, the MAC, UConn, maybe having to consider a lot of other factors as well. I think Conference USA, as I mentioned earlier, having to look at Tarleton State. I think West Florida is potentially a candidate to jump up to the D1 level. They've been doing all kinds of fantastic things down there at the D2 level. The Argonauts, a great football team down in West Florida. So anyway, just keep your eyes on that. We'll obviously keep you locked on over on the Twitter machine as things continue to develop there. But guys, closing thoughts here as we round out another offseason episode.
Spring football's right around the corner. Lots of news to talk about. NFL draft fun. We still got a lot to talk about, guys, even though there's 24 Saturdays till college football. It never stops.
Ah, but who's counting?
UConn needs to go to the MAC so we can preserve one of the best rivalries in college football. UConn and UMass. That'd be the move.
Oh boy. Well, write in. Let us know what you think. Follow the show. Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you subscribe. Join the Jimmys and the Joes. For Trey Reeves, Garrett Turney, I'm Mitch Mason. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Until next time, so long, everybody.
Gracious. Yep. How about